I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, oak trees are a part of San Antonio's identity, and they make up a big part of the city's canopy. But they're under threat from a fungal pathogen that can sweep through a neighborhood and quickly wipe out tree after tree. Texas A&M Forest Service describes oak wilt as one of the most destructive tree diseases in the U.S. and says it's killing oaks in central Texas at epidemic proportions. Oak wilt is a real neighborhood-scale risk, but it is preventable and manageable if homeowners take some preventative steps. The complication is that drought stress and other tree problems can look like oak wilt, so homeowners should not assume that every browning tree has the disease. How to protect your tree from oak wilt? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Oak trees are one of the signature trees of San Antonio and the Hill Country. They shade our homes, they frame our neighborhoods, they build our canopy, they add value to our property. And many of those trees face a serious threat from oak wilt, a fungal disease that can spread from tree to tree and kill some oaks very quickly. The problem is especially concerning for parts of San Antonio and Bexar County, where oak grow very close together and they share connected root systems. Once oak wilt gets established, it can move in through a neighborhood and become very difficult and expensive to control. But there are steps that homeowners can take to reduce their risk. Timing is very important. Pruning practices matter. And knowing the warning signs, that makes a difference. So how big of a problem is oak wilt in San Antonio? How can homeowners protect their trees? What should you do if you suspect oak wilt is already in your neighborhood? Joining us today to talk about that is Ross Hosea. He is with the San Antonio Parks and Recreation. He's the manager of the Urban Forestry Division. Elizabeth Nwayu is a woodland ecologist with the Texas A&M Forest Service. And Mark Bird is a City of San Antonio arborist with the Development Services Division. Welcome, all of y'all. It's great to have you in studio.
Good to be here.
Glad to be here.
So, Ross, how bad is oak wilt in San Antonio? Is it worse than normal, just normal bad? How is it?
Great question. So, oak wilt's been around in our area for a number of years. And I don't know that it's gotten necessarily worse, the number of oak wilt infection centers, but the ones that do exist have grown. Now, speaking on the behalf of the City of San Antonio, there's approximately 27 infection centers, which is about what it's been. There might be plus one, minus one through the time, but like a concentric circle or like a donut, as it gets bigger, more and more houses are impacted by it over time.
Infections centers, meaning like pockets where this is happening.
That's correct. So one tree would start where the infection got started, and then it just grows from there.
And these tend to be where in the city and the county?
All in the northwest part of the city and including the county. So for the most part, all oak wilt within the City of San Antonio occurs outside 410, with the exception of maybe one, and west of 281 and north of Petrenko. So think of the very northwest quadrant of the city.
So if I don't live in that quadrant, can I just not worry about these practices?
I wouldn't say you don't need to worry, because it can spread to other areas. These good practices that we're going to talk about today are good for the entire city, but there's less likelihood. We do get calls all the time, people saying they have oak wilt. When we figure out where they live, we're usually a little less concerned because there's just been no activity in those areas.
Let me give the number, because we definitely want to hear from our listeners on this. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Have you had to deal with oak wilt in your house, in your neighborhood? What have you been in your experiences? What do you want other people to know? What questions do you have about oak wilt? Give us a call, 833-877-8255. Mark Bird, the City of San Antonio is out there trying to let people know that this is a problem. They put these door hangers out in neighborhoods. What's going on there?
So the idea with the door hangers is to inform our neighborhoods about oak wilt, how it spread and how to prevent it. And we especially target timing with our brush collection cycle. So brush collection cycle happens twice a year. We've also worked very closely with our solid waste department in order to schedule our brush collections outside of a window of time, February 1 through June 30, where it's recommended to avoid pruning oaks. So those brush collection cycles, we put these door hangers out before they're coming through neighborhoods, but then also through this other coordination with solid waste, make sure that they're not hitting neighborhoods that are in these oak wilt centers, as Ross described, or in those immediate adjacent areas.
Elizabeth Nowal, with the Texas A&M Forest Service, I guess you have a larger view, not just San Antonio. You're thinking about the Hill Country and across the state of Texas. What's the view about oak wilt?
So personally, I do cover about 20 counties within the Hill Country, and we have been seeing that the spread has been quite significant. And curbing oak wilt is a community effort. That means that everyone has to be preventing new infections by adhering to most of these recommendations that we give out.
And figuring out how to prevent the spread. Because if you don't know, it can be easily transferred to your property or someone else's.
Absolutely. So if you prune your trees between the months where we have high beetle activity, which is the months of February through to June, you're highly likely to get that infection if you do not paint those pruning cuts. So it's essential that you do all of that after that recommended time.
So describe what you mean by paint those cuts.
So it's essentially creating a barrier between the fresh cut wound from pruning or trimming or wounding with your mowers. So you can use a paint from your local hardware store just to create that seal, because that sap will attract the beetles. It does have a nice fruity odor, I think, for the beetles. So it will definitely attract them. But if you put that paint, it will mask that scent.
So just some aerosol latex paint I can just get from the hardware store and have to right away? I mean, like immediately?
Immediately. We recommend that if you cannot paint it, do not cut it. And it has to be cut and paint. And anything that's a quarter inch in diameter and above is what you have to paint.
I'm trying to imagine quarter inch. That's not that. That's very small.
Like a pinky.
Yeah. I thought that it would have to be a big limb or something.
No, they've done studies and they've seen inoculation from that size and up. So it's from scientific studies as well.
So you said so June is the last month of the season, as we call it. So is this so we're still in it?
We are. And then people also have to understand that these beetles are native. They're flying all year round, but we do see that peak between the months of February through to June. So regardless of the season, you're supposed to be painting all of your oak wounds.
Right. And Ross, did you want to add to that about, Mark, you want to add to that?
So the city of San Antonio has an oak wilt ordinance that says you shall paint all wounds that expose sapwood on oak trees. So it doesn't say all oak trees are susceptible to oak wilt. So when you're pruning an oak tree, regardless if it's a red oak, chinkapin, live oak, lazy oak, should we keep going with the list of oaks? All oaks are susceptible, so you paint all wounds. The city doesn't specify a size. It just says is if it exposes sapwood anywhere on the tree, branches, twigs, trunk, or roots, to paint them.
Yeah, so I'm going to hit this break, but I'm curious about, I mean, trees get damaged all the time. You know, limbs are broken off. I'm seeing limbs breaking off now because of all the the leaf growth that's happening because of the rain. I'm going to ask you about that and more when we come back. Also, we got callers on the board, Jennifer and David. I'll get you on the air when we come right back. If you got questions and comments, you've got a story to tell us about how oak wilt came to your yard, I want to hear it. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after this quick break.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about oak wilt. We have it in San Antonio across Bexar County through central Texas. We're figuring out what can be done in order to help people manage their trees so that they don't have to deal with it. And let's take your calls, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Jennifer. And Jennifer, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, quick question. When you hire a tree trimming company or you do it yourself, we're supposed to paint. Do the tree trimming companies, are they required to do that? And also, is there any tool cleaning that needs to be done from tree to tree? What's the regulations on that?
All right, Jennifer, thanks for those questions. Appreciate it. Mark Bird is a City of San Antonio arborist with the Development Services Division.
Hi, Jennifer. So great question. The paint can be the recommendation, and even what the professionals use, the contractors doing work, the licensed contractors and certified arborists, generally use a flat black spray paint. So it doesn't have to be a fancy wound dressing. What you're trying to do is just mask the wound, cover it so that the beetle is not attracted to
it. But the tree trimmer is supposed to do it.
Tree trimmers should be doing that.
And if they're not, you got to go, hey, buddy, would you get started?
You should ask them before they start doing work. Ask them if they know what kind of tree they're pruning. Make sure that they're able to identify if you have oaks on your property or not. I know my office gets lots of calls where people are claiming people are pruning trees and they're not painting them. And we'll go out there and find that they're pruning elms or pecans or even hackberries, and those trees don't have to be painted, but it's the oak that we're worried about.
What about the sanitizing of the tools?
Yes. So we do recommend disinfecting your tools between trees. So when you show up on a new site, they should be disinfecting. Can use something as simple as a bleach solution, Lysol, just something to disinfect the tools.
Not too complicated, pretty low bar to ask someone to do that.
Correct.
And that's for all trees? You think it would protect all trees from anything?
We don't have a high incident of other diseases that are transmitted through tools in our area, fortunately. And it's just an extra precaution to take.
All right, another caller. Let's go to David. And David, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Following along the lines of the previous caller, disease trees happen in my neighborhood. I see a lot of my neighbors waiting until just about brush collection time to hire their tree trimming crews to cut down the trees, and they put it out with the brush collection. And so my question is the city doing anything to, I guess, separate those dead and infected tree limbs from the regular brush that you would use for creating mulch? Because my fear is that getting mulch from the city, which is free, inadvertently spreads the disease spores in my yard.
All right, David, thank you for that. So, Ross?
David, that's a great question. This is one of our most frequent questions that we get. So oak wilt, it does not do well outside of its host. So once that tree gets cut down, and it's sitting in the tree and it gets mulched up, it goes to the brush site and it gets mulched up. That fungus does not compete well against other fungi that are in the environment. And so it does not spread through mulch. It doesn't spread through smoke if it's burned. In fact, the best way to get rid of it is to mulch it up, run it through a grinder. And so that we find there's going to be no spread. The disease can only move from tree to tree through the root system or through the beetle, but not through the mulch.
How interconnected are these oak trees through their root systems?
Very connected. That's why it's such an issue. So oak wilt is a problem all throughout the U.S. It's up even up and around the Great Lakes area. It's a little bit of everywhere. But the reason it's so unique of a problem here in Texas is because of, as you described earlier, the way that our oak trees grow in motts. All of those roots are interconnected. And so think of it as a highway that allows this disease to move freely underground, which is why we put so much effort into prevention. Because once it gets started, it is hard to get rid of, almost nearly impossible.
So I have a lot and have a lot of oak trees on there, and one of them has oak wilt. Are all of them going to have it, or can I see here a lot about trenching. Is that going to create a barrier and prevent them? Elizabeth, can you answer that?
Yes. So one of our recommendations in containing oak wilt is to install a trench that's 100 feet away from the last symptomatic tree. And that trench has a minimum depth of about 4 feet. So the severing of those roots will essentially isolate that mortality center from the healthy trees. And research has shown that these trenches can hold for up to 8 to 10 years. And then anything within that mortality center that you still want to protect that has at least a canopy of about 40% and above, you could also go ahead and do fungicide injections. You can do therapeutic for those that are already symptomatic or preventative for those that are not yet showing symptoms.
Is this considered like the sole problem of that property owner? Does the city or anyone think like, oh, we need to go in and help them, we want to prevent the spread of oak wilt throughout the community. Does the city come in and start digging those trenches?
So there is no program by the city to try to do anything more. There, several years ago, an attempt was done to do trenching in a neighborhood, but it over a short period of time, the trench failed. We've got different challenges that come. First off, we've got so much underground infrastructure that you can't do an effective trench whenever you've got sewer lines, water lines, gas lines that more than likely you have streets that you're crossing. You've got to go through different properties, get all the properties. And then also we have a lot of limestone that roots find those fissures and they grow deeper than that 4 feet. Hey, if everything grew just the way we design it to stop it, it would be great. But roots grow where roots grow, and it's not always that we are able to sever those trees.
Is there a particular type of oak? I mean, you're saying it's all oaks. We have lots of types of oaks. Which ones are the most vulnerable? Elizabeth?
Okay. So oak trees are susceptible in different ways. So we have our red oak group that's very highly susceptible. We tend to see mortality between 4 to 6 weeks. And then when we look at our live oaks, they're intermediate. We see mortality within 3 to 6 months. But these get hit pretty hard by the oak wilt because of those interconnected root systems. So we tend to see more spread and progression within the live oaks. And then with your white oaks, they are less susceptible, but not immune.
And so is there any way thinking, can you like inoculate a tree? Maybe before you plant the tree, do something to kind of help it? You know, I mean, a vaccine for the tree or something?
Yeah, currently, if only there was. Currently, there is nothing that's known. A lot of research has gone into this. There's nothing that can inoculate or prevent that. The chemicals, the fungicides that are used mostly, they do have a prophylactic quality. So if you time it right when you inject that tree, as it's getting pressure from the disease, it can be effective.
All right, let me call another caller. Let's go to RJ. And RJ, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Regarding...
Yes.
Healing of the tree via an organic route. There's a radio station host out of San Antonio, Bob Webster. Call out to him. He's mentioned a compound hornmeal, and I think it's got to be refined in a certain way. Have you guys heard anything regarding that way, regarding the healing of the tree and applying cornmeal to an infected tree?
All right. Cornmeal. All right. Elizabeth.
Great question. So with cornmeal, there hasn't been any scientific research to back up that information, but we recommend any fungicide injection to have that active ingredient of propiconazole, and it has to be a systemic injection. So if it's a soil drench, which is what I think this cornmeal is, you have no way of controlling how much the tree is taking up, and we don't know what type of fungicide that cornmeal has. So it really just has to be propiconazole, and it has to be injections that are systemic into the tree where we can control the dose and rate that's going into the tree. So if it's a preventative fungicide injection, it will be a slightly lower dose, and if it's a therapeutic injection, it's a higher dose.
Well, cornmeal is pretty cheap. I mean, I use it around my tomato plants to keep it from getting fungal. Is there anything wrong with trying something like spreading cornmeal around?
You might as well be feeding fire ants with cornmeal.
Okay, so no scientific basis for that. So what exactly does oak wilt look like? How do you eyeball a tree and say, oh, that one's got oak wilt? Do you want to talk about that, Ross?
Yeah. So the number one way that you're going to identify it is through foliar symptoms. You're going to look at a tree, so a live oak, for instance. It's what we call the interveinal necrosis or veinal necrosis. So basically, if you look at a leaf and you turn it over, you see that main vein going up the rib of the leaf, and then you have like a herringbone where the veins kind of arch out from that in a V pattern. And so what happens is when the wilt begins, meaning it's starving it for water, we're going to see those veins that are conducting that water start to die. And so they'll turn various colors. They can turn yellows, reds, browns, and it creates this herringbone pattern on the tree. Now, it can be difficult to identify sometimes if you don't have a trained eye. That's why we recommend, if you're not sure, call a certified arborist, reach out to the state, something like that, to get someone that has a trained eye to be able to recognize it.
But our trees have been going through a lot of stress lately, all this drought and this heat. A lot of these trees aren't used to it. You know, things are changing. Do people think I've got oak wilt, but they don't?
All the time. It gets misdiagnosed visually very, very often, which, again, is why I recommend hiring a qualified person that can recognize it. And even sometimes even we go look at it and we're not 100% certain. There are some ways we can do some samples and send it to a laboratory for analysis to get a definitive diagnosis.
So don't be cutting down trees right away, you know, because you think you might have oak wilt.
I would be 100% certain or near certain before I go and cut down my prized oak tree.
Yeah. So, I mean, how valuable is a tree to a landowner? And if they lost a tree because of this, how much property damage are we talking about being caused by this?
Generally speaking, we can say up to 20% of your property's value can be attributed to the trees, 15 to 20%. So if you have some very large mature trees and you lose all of them, it could be a significant loss to your property value.
Right. And what about creation of the heat island effect and all these other environmental repercussions from?
Yeah, all those other great things that trees bring, you're losing all of those as well. And in fact, the larger the tree, the more impact it's going to have on those, because we find that larger trees have larger amounts of benefits. It's not exactly proportional.
Does it matter if it's an older tree? Does that make it more susceptible, have it more resilient? As a tree is a tree, it's going to be able to get it.
Right. Oak wilt is a primary pathogen. That means it can affect your young trees, old trees, healthy trees, and stressed trees. It does not need a prior stressor for it to invade a tree. So all oak trees are susceptible to it.
Is there any kind of notification that goes out to these centers where oak wilt is happening, so that, like here in the city of San Antonio, do y'all notify a neighborhood and saying, we've got an oak wilt problem in your neighborhood and we need you to take extra precautions?
So we do have a program in addition to, as Mark said earlier, you know, we with the solid waste, we send out door hangers in advance of the brush pickups at least once a year, and that's ongoing now in the spring. We have another program that we target those neighborhoods with more in depth for those people that actually have oak wilt.
I go to the neighborhood meetings and things, talk to people.
And to their door. It's specific information at their door.
All right, we're taking another break. Our phone lines are open. If you've had oak wilt, tell us how that went down, and what are you doing to protect your trees? What are your concerns? What are you seeing in your neighborhood? What can be done to educate homeowners about keeping oak wilt out of their yard? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after this break.
Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The city of San Antonio has an active fight going on against oak wilt, a devastating fungal disease that affects the city's tree canopy. There are some municipal ordinances. We have seasonal brush collection shifts. We have public education efforts. The city mandates that all oak wounds have to be painted within 30 minutes and require tree professionals to hold a valid city license. This is all in order to try and keep this disease at bay. It can wipe out neighborhoods of these valuable and lovely, majestic trees. So we're talking about oak wilt and how we can work together in order to keep this from spreading to your yard. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Eva. And Eva, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. So I have my dad, he's 90 years old, lives over by the Windcrest area, and he suspected oak wilt on four of his oaks. And we took pictures, sent them to the Texas A&M Forest Service, and off of those pictures, they determined that it's not oak wilt, that it's probably hypoxylon canker. My question is, how for sure would something like that be able to be diagnosed or determined just by pictures through an email?
All right. Thank you, Eva. So Elizabeth Noayu is a woodland ecologist with the Texas A&M Forest Service. Do you know what she means by this hypo thing?
Yes. So she's talking about hypoxylon canker, which is a fungus that affects oak trees and other hardwood trees that are drought stressed. And when we diagnose it off of photos, usually the homeowner would have sent a full photo that shows the main trunk, the limbs, and the leaves. And with hypoxylin, the major indicator is that the bark starts falling off from the sides of the trees to expose the spores of that hypoxylin canker. So usually the hypoxylin canker would have about four different colors. Sometimes it can be a silvery gray color. Sometimes it's a black color of those spores, or a brown to like a tan color. So depending on those photos, probably would have seen that happening on that tree.
So you can tell the difference through the photos, but this sounds pretty bad for a tree.
Well, it's pretty bad for the tree, but it's slightly better than oak wilt in that it's not a primary pathogen that will attack your healthy trees and your stressed trees. This one is just going for those trees that are already stressed, that are succumbing to drought stress, and they do not have their defenses up. So this hypoxylin canker, it's an opportunistic disease that's just waiting for that opportunity to inoculate the tree.
Well, we have a lot of trees these days that are dealing with drought stress. I mean, the ground is basically, it's all the moisture had been sucked out of it. We got rain now, but where will we be in 2 or 3 months, you know? So I guess that's, you know, things are changing in terms of our canopy. Let's go to the next caller. Let's go to Benjamin. And Benjamin, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Ben. So I have a question about the mitigation costs and fees for when a developer develops the site. I've been doing tree mitigation plans since probably 2004, and the cost per inch has been $200 an inch, and it has not gone up with the cost of everything else. So basically, it is cheaper for a developer to just pay into the city fund versus plant a tree. And my question is, does the city plan to raise that mitigation cost per inch?
All right, Benjamin, thank you for that question. So let's go to Mark Bird, the City of San Antonio Arborist.
Hi, Ben. Interesting you bring that question up. There's been a lot of conversation about that. We are getting ready to do our five-year cycle of UDC amendments and reviewing the fee schedules and preservation ordinances. And that one has been brought up for discussion. There are certain options that they have as far as mitigation, as you pointed out, and sounds like you've have direct experience with that, and that there are, when we look in our residential subdivisions, there is a requirement that they do plant a minimum of two trees per lot on those new developments. There are, besides the preservation requirement, there are also canopy requirements, and which means that an area has to, we have a lot of old ag and range land that's being developed, and in order to make sure we're trying to grow more canopy, we implemented a canopy requirement. So sometimes there's two, four or more trees that are planted on a property to meet those goals as well. So as a developer, you do have the option of plant, pay, or preservation. And we encourage preservation in keeping smaller trees that may not be protected per the ordinance in order to meet those goals of mitigation and canopy as well. We find that the best tree is the tree that's already growing on a site, and would encourage development to take advantage of preserving more trees where and how they can.
So what the city is looking at this situation and possibly raising that fee or whatever that is?
That will definitely be part of the conversation as we go through the UDC amendments. And that's the Unified Development Code. That's our development code for the City of San Antonio.
All right, another caller. Let's go to Lisa. And Lisa, you're on the air.
Thank you. I moved back to San Antonio about 3 years ago, and I had three live oak trees on my property that were in pretty bad shape, and I had them removed. And it's very, very, very expensive for a homeowner to remove trees that are that rotten. I mean, they were rotten right down in the middle of the trees. Is there any way that, or has the city saw about using some of that mitigation money to help homeowners remove those trees that are affected by this blight?
All right, Lisa, thank you for that. So there is like a fund, right, that the city has.
So and Ross there are different programs through parks that use these funds, and Ross, I think, can address some of that.
Yeah, Lisa, that's a great question. So by ordinance, the funds that are generated through development or the loss of these trees comes over to the Parks Department. And we're charged with spending those dollars on both public and private property to increase and enhance tree canopy throughout the city. And that's the restriction of it. With the issues that we've had with drought and the freeze, we know a lot of trees are dying out there. And we know it's expensive, just like she mentioned. And so the city has gotten some questions, hey, how can we help out? There was a program a couple of years ago that District 3, I believe, came up with and said, hey, let's appropriate some dollars. Those have been exhausted to help people of need to be able to remove those trees. But there is that question of, can we use the fund? It's not the intent of the fund, but that question is coming up to see if that alteration needs to be made.
It could be a public safety issue. Trees falling over, not good. There's a tree that I drive past every day on the way to work. I kind of look at it. Is today the day that this tree is going to fall on top of me? You know, so how do you... The caller brings up a great point. You know, these trees could fall over if we don't address them. If people don't have the funds in order to deal with that, it could cause other problems. It's a cascade issue.
It can, you know, and there's always the option through code compliance development services has officers out there that can look at this. If they see a need, they can reach out to Mark's team. They'll go out and provide the assessment in some cases and then be able to make recommendations or requirements for removal.
All right. Another caller, Arturo. Arturo, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm sorry. I just coincidentally bought, I planted a bur oak, tiny little thing. I bought it in an HEB, and I bought two more, and I have them ready to be planted. But, and I read all the label stuff that they come with. But is there any, and I have them in a well-lit place and all that. Is there anything I need to do to prevent something like that? I am in the Northeast, though, New Braunfels. Is there any advice?
All right, Elizabeth?
So oak wilt will affect different types of oaks at different severities. So your bur oak is part of the white oak species, which are the ones that are more resistant to oak wilt. They are not immune, but they're resistant. So you just have to make sure when you plant it, you're not wounding the tree, leaving any openings for infection, and making sure that as the tree grows, you're pruning it at the right times and not pruning between the months of February through to June. So prevention is the key for you to protect that tree.
Right. So I'm thinking about planting some trees. Should I think twice about planting an oak tree? I mean, it seems like oak trees do really well here. I mean, what should I be thinking about, like, in selection of a tree? Oak or no? Move to something else.
I think it depends on where you are. But generally speaking, our live oaks do very, very well here. As we were talking earlier, they're the tree that's probably held with our climate stress the best. They handle the drought, the cold. And so by no means, we want diverse forests out there. We want a low diversity of trees. And so we would still recommend planting oak trees.
All right, we're taking another break, and we're going to get some more callers on the air, Renee and others. We'll get you on the air when we come back. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're talking about oak wilt, this devastating fungal disease affecting the city's tree canopy. The more that you know about it, how to prevent it, the better we can protect our trees. We're going to have that conversation some more when we come back from this quick break.
Broadway Bank, in partnership with the San Antonio Food Bank, have started their Summer Snacks for Kids campaign, providing children in low-income households with nutritious food that they lose access to during the summer. All donations go directly toward buying nutritious snacks for kids in need. Details are at broadway.bank/snacks.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about oak wilt and the tree canopy in San Antonio. Let's go straight to a caller, Renee. And Renee, you're on the air.
Hi. I got a question about the cutting down of giant oak trees and stuff like that. I live by the Incarnate Word College, and on Broadway, I know I wasn't losing my mind because they have a parking lot on Broadway that was at one time completely covered by these enormous oak trees. And then it seemed like all of a sudden they're missing a bunch. And I know I wasn't crazy. I know that there were many more oak trees than that. And then I realized why those trees were missing. It's because they had installed, it's so ironic, I'm passing by it right this second, but they had installed on one of the buildings facing Broadway this metal sculpture, and the sight line was improved with the cutting down of these live oaks. But my question goes to that the city wouldn't know of oak trees being cut down unless it's either reported or observed by the city enforcement agents. Am I correct in that or no?
I don't know. Let's ask Mark Bird with the city of San Antonio. He's an arborist.
Well, I would really be interested in knowing the address or the pretty close to location of where that is so we could have an inspector go check on the
activity. It sounds like Broadway and Hildebrand.
at Broadway and Hildebrand.
At Incarnate Word University.
At the university? Was it at the university?
Can we pot him back up? And Renee, you there?
Yes.
Yeah. What's the location again?
It's at Broadway and Hildebrand. It's the building that's facing Broadway, the corner. And if you look, you can see the metal sculpture on the wall of the building very clearly now. And I know before you could not see it. Mm-hmm. And I know for a fact that parking lot was completely shaded. It was completely shaded. Then all of a sudden they mysteriously disappeared over the course of like a week or 2 weeks or whatever it was.
Okay.
And
so let me get Mark to respond. So you can just go, you send it as an inspector.
Yeah, we would have an inspector go check on the site. And I do believe there was permitting for the improvements that they were doing around that building. And we'll look into it, but I believe that we had permits on permits for the improvements there, and that would have accounted for trees on that property.
Well, this helped. Have a question when it comes to oak wilt. When people get oak wilt, do they self-report to the city? How do y'all track it? Is this something that people need to call in to 311. What do they need to do about that?
Certainly calling in to 311. And what we are going to do is refer them to Elizabeth. it was interesting. The one caller called in and said, hey, we asked for pictures. The city doesn't provide a service, really, for us to go out and look at private properties. But I ask people to send me pictures of their tree, of the symptoms that they have. And I've looked at trees for a lot of years, and I can tell a lot of things about trees and their condition, their health, their species. And if I'm not able to make a clear, positive identification from those pictures, and I think it might be oak wilt, I'm referring them to Elizabeth, and I share her number with those people.
And what's that number, Elizabeth?
The number is 830-777-9066.
And you have a website.
Yes, our website is texasoakwilt.org. You can go to the Find My Forester tab and put in your county, which will be Bexar County for San Antonio, and I will pop up with my contact information on there as well.
Okay, let me go to another caller, Ruben. Ruben, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I'm going to apologize, not about oak wilt, but I noticed in my neighborhood, I noticed some trees along the median, oak trees, along what's over, Weissman Boulevard between 151 and Westover Hills. All these trees have been infested with balm moths, and it's taking a toll on those trees. And I'm wondering if the city was doing anything about those trees or anything.
Balm moths. Okay, let's go to Ross. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, Ruben, this is a question we get every time we go out to the public to talk about trees. Balm moss always comes up. So it's something that's natural in our area. Everybody has it, but it is not killing your tree. We will say that many, many times. It is not killing your tree. It is aesthetically displeasing. We understand that. And it can cause some stress, I guess, and for light for the tree, but it's definitely not a parasite. It's listed as an epiphyte, meaning it gets all of its nutrients and its water from the air. It simply uses it as the tree as a place with which to grow on, but it does not set roots inside the tree. And so what we find sometimes is that it looks bad. It's on dead limbs. You think it killed the limb. It did not kill the limb. We find that it grows. You'll find it growing on power lines, wooden fence posts, things like that, things it can't get anything from. It's okay to remove it as long as it's done in a responsible manner by a qualified person. It can be expensive and very detailed. And what we often find is if a person wants it all removed, probably damage is going to be done to that tree in the process because people are just going to end up cutting green limbs to get rid of it.
All right, now let's go to Henrietta. Henrietta, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And I'm glad they mentioned 311 because my concern is also that the person that's taking the report is not able to see a visual pictures. And when I've been there, I have seen that the tree that has fallen down is covering 3/4 of the street. And then they tell the people it's going to take a week for it to be removed. And I'm happy to say that I've been in that situation where I have helped people move the tree because it's in an area that is dark. People can see. And if you're new to the area or just passing through, it's going to cause an accident and a liability to the city of San Antonio. But a lot of it, let me tell you, I know that CPS Energy, Mr. Rudy Garza, and AT&T, they deal with a lot of vegetation maintenance, and I know Rudy Garza takes care of it very well. Who doesn't is AT&T, that they have these branches on the trees, and they don't take care of them. Uh-huh. So I hope that in the future they do a better job, because that's what costs the city more money when we have to
Henrietta, thank
you for new phone calls and new phone lines, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And so as far as the city goes, when there's a tree that falls down and blocks a road, it sounds like that's something that gets taken care of right away.
It does, and our public works department is very responsive. So calling 311 and letting them know the tree has fallen in the street, is blocking the right-of-way, and they have a crew that's able to respond to those.
Except when it happens all at once, when we get a huge storm that blows through here.
They mobilize and do the best they can, and as Henrietta mentioned, the CPS contractors are able to help out in some cases, especially if they're clearing lines.
Another caller, Leslie. Leslie, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is about what is the city's responsibility when they damage your tree? We had Public Works out here enlarging the sidewalks, I assume for ADA compliance. And I have an oak tree on my property, and to do the sidewalk, they damaged, you know, with a, I don't know, skid steer, whatever tractor it was, they're damaged the roots of this oak tree. So the contractor that the city had, you know, they left and nobody painted the roots that were exposed. And so I was out there cutting the roots, painting the roots, and the project manager came by and told me that the contractor would take care of that. Well, they had been gone for an hour. So he says, well, what we can do is we can have a city arborist come around and check on your tree every so often. Was he just paying me lip service, or is that an actual fact?
All right, Leslie, sorry to hear about all that. Mark Byrd, what can you tell us? Since it's very localized kind of an issue.
Very here, localized, but and sidewalk and street projects are ongoing. We're in perpetual construction zones here.
Yeah, I kind of had a problem. I had a crepe myrtle. They expanded the street, and it kind of killed my crepe myrtle. But I figured it was an easement, so it really wasn't my tree, actually.
So, and you're right. The easement, the right of way, and it is their authority. I had a sidewalk put in recently, and it wiped out my whole nativescape. But certainly making sure you get the information for the project manager and let them know that the contractor hasn't taken care of it. It's the project management team's responsibility to ensure that the contractors are doing the jobs per the contract.
All right, so we're almost out of time, but I want to hit the high points back to Oak Wilt. Ross, give me the – oh, Elizabeth.
Yes, I just wanted to let the homeowners know that as the Texas A&M Forest Service, we have a Texas Oak Wilt Suppression Program that cost shares funds for red oak removal. So if you suspect that your red oak has oak wilt, we can cost share up to $2,000 at a cap of 50% of the total cost. And then if you have a big enough land that's feasible for trenching to isolate mortality centers, we also do have a cost share program of up to $5,000 with a cap of 50% for that total trench cost.
So people should check out what Texas A&M Forest Service can do for you. If you have oak wilt on your property, you might find some financial relief in trying to keep that from spreading. I want to thank all of our guests. Ross Lucea with the San Antonio Parks and Recreation Manager, Urban Forestry Division. Elizabeth Moayu is the Woodland Ecologist with Texas A&M Forest Service, and also Mark Bird with the City of San Antonio. This is The Source.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.